Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
Welcome back to KIWK, a forum to discuss important topics for historically suppressed voices within communities of color. Our KIWK team is back in the house. We have BJ Simone, we have Rita Williams, and Maria Jimenez. All right, BJ, so what is going on?
All right. Good to see everybody back. Our word on the street today is going to take a different direction. Our own host, Cindy Barclay, it goes a little bit beyond the street. She actually goes into the home of family members who are taking care of loved ones that are receiving dialysis. We're going to get a chance to hear from three remarkable and absolutely courageous women who are on a day-to-day basis providing love and support and care to their family members. We're going to hear in their own voices the stories that they have agreed to share with us, and we're going to get a firsthand glance of what it's like to take care of a dialysis patient that needs family assistance. Our first caregiver is Joanna Fuentes. She's a mother of three, taking care of her 91-year-old mom who started receiving dialysis in 2019. We're gonna hear a firsthand account of what it's like to provide that hands-on care, especially while you're trying to balance other lifetime responsibilities. Let's take a listen.
Hi, everybody. This is Cindy with Kicking It with Kidneys. I'm in the home of Mrs. Eloisa Sanchez. And today we're going to be interviewing her daughter, Joanna, who knows a lot about dialysis, a lot about medications, a lot about renal failure. Okay? So let's, Ms. Sanchez.
She said,
I guess you're
right. She said another one.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You sit wherever you want to sit. I'll be over here.
Okay. All right. So, Joanna, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Thank you so much for joining us today on Kicking It with Kidneys, okay? So today what we want to talk about is your story, your struggles. Uh-huh. I understand that you're the primary caregiver for your mother.
I am.
Do you still work?
I do not work. I actually would not be able to keep a job if I had one with all
really?
The... Yeah.
Really?
We had a interesting situation. My father was here with my mom. They were very independent. They, once I gave birth to my daughter about 12 years ago, we lost my dad 1 year later. So we celebrated her first birthday, and then that following month my father passed away. He just, a small accident in the backyard took his life like that. Her whole world revolved around my father. When my father died, she lost that.
That's a cultural thing, I think. Uh-huh.
Well, also they're, because they're elderly, my mom never learned how to drive. Never, ever. My father drove her to the store. My father drove her to the bank. My father did all that for her. So when he died, she was left kind of stuck at home because she had no independence. It was all through my father. So I took that over. I started taking her places. When she was alone, I realized I couldn't leave my small kids with her because she was suffering. Number one, she went into depression after losing my dad. She couldn't talk. I got her enrolled in a senior center to get her around other elders that she could talk to vent her feelings. That helped her get out of her shell.
Yeah.
It helped her. She made friends. She did well. I ended up staying home because we had to deal with just helping. I just had so many other things
so
to do.
Much.
With the baby, I had two small children. My middle child got diagnosed with autism. So we had that going on.
Yeah.
I had my baby, and then I had my mother, and I had just lost my dad. So it was a lot all at once. And me and her just kind of, we went through therapy together. She would cry to me and tell me how much she missed my dad. I would cry back. I miss daddy too.
Yes.
And then we would both kind of pull each other through it.
Yes.
Which was fine. And then her health began to fail. So around,
When year was that?
I want to say 2019. My dad died in 2010.
Okay.
Around 2017, 18, and 19, she started having just small issues with her kidneys, just things that they were monitoring. Nothing severe, nothing that required dialysis.
Yeah.
And something happened in 2019. We ended up, she got really sick. We went to the hospital. It was at that point, I don't remember what all the findings were, but it was a lot at once. And they said, your mom is going to be put on dialysis here and now. And I'm like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. So they got us prepared for that.
Yes.
We didn't know what was going to happen. They told us the options. And, all I knew about it was people go to a center, they get dialysis, and that was it.
Yeah.
And talking to her doctor, And him knowing her and how she was, my mom is very independent, very stubborn. Although she's relying on me, she still has her own mind.
Yes,
and she also has her own demands.
Yes.
She never smiled at the kitty doctor.
He
never touched her, never once. He only greeted her with a smile, but she would always just kind of look at him suspiciously, like,
trust,
you're going to do something to me.
Yes,
I know you are.
Is her doctor Latino, by the way?
No, he's, I'm not sure what he is, but he's sweet as can be, Dr. Costa.
Okay.
I love
okay.
him. I don't know. I have no clue, but
yeah.
if my mom sees dark hair, she automatically assumes you're Latino, so she talks to him in Spanish.
Okay.
She doesn't.
So let me ask you something. Do you think, I hear a lot of patients verbalize that if they had a doctor that was somewhat of their own nationality, that would be better. Did you experience that? Did you have that effect? Do you think that, or do you not think that it matters?
I don't know that it matters. I'm going to take that back.
Uh-huh.
It, to me, it doesn't matter at all for myself. I trust medicine. My mother, because of the generational gap and the era that she grew up in, she prefers a certain type of doctor, and that's just what she likes, but that's her way. With the doctor, again, he would laugh. He'd stay in the corner very frightened of my mom, and he's like, Joanna, I didn't touch your mom, and she's still not smiling. And I'm like, she likes her. I promise she likes it. He's like, I don't know. So when she got put on dialysis, again, he would always, when he'd come see her, he'd stay, he'd get up, he'd come in, he'd always come to the end of the room, and he'd stay right over there, and he'd bring my mother, and she'd still, with that untrusting eye. Well, she got put on dialysis. Okay, they did the thing in her chest. They did that.
The catheter.
Yes. It was also a suggestion that eventually she would get it moved from here to her arm. Mom ended up having a triple aortic aneurysm.
She
had surgery. They put a stent in one arm. Apparently, there's a 1% chance that a complication could occur. She was
that
1%. So she lost sensation in this arm, which left her with only this arm, which then put us in a position, well, if you take that arm that she only has away from her,
what else does she have left?
How will she function? That got
taken. Wasn't the dominant arm that she had left? Was she lucky?
That was
fortunate.
Only the right arm, correct. And this one now, no sensation here. So we were left in that predicament. Her situation with the kidney wasn't necessarily that her kidneys failed. It was that she had a procedure done called, well, not even a procedure. She had just age-related uterine prolapse.
Okay, so it wasn't due to diabetes or hypertension
To their knowledge, no. She had uterine prolapse. The prolapse, because it was coming out of, exiting, they did a small procedure just to push everything back in place, which was non-invasive. When that procedure was done, however, everything settled due to her age, it landed on her bladder. She was no longer able to release and void. So there went the backup, there went the kidneys. So it took us a long time to figure all this out.
What was going on?
Right. I don't think any of us understood that. And honestly, until maybe the last year, we finally thought about all this, went over through all her records and how did this happen. And that was what it was. But even that doctor who did that procedure did it because he didn't want to put my mom through a lot. She was already 85, I guess, when this happened. And he's like, you know, we don't want to move things. We don't need to move. You don't want to. He's like, it's really invasive. You know, plus she has high blood pressure. So all that was put off, you know, the table.
Okay.
So we had her on dialysis. That began in 2019. Trial and error, because there's limits with dialysis, right? There's the water, you have to watch the water intake, so we battled over that. There's the diet issue, we definitely battled over that.
Let me ask you something about that. We've got issues now in the United States to where you're talking about gas prices are just out of the roof, and food. So with her structured diet, how are you managing financially?
Financially, we're okay because we have a lot of family members. There's always someone pitching in and bringing something to mom. Mom does do well, but
You're fortunate. A lot of people don't have that support.
I know, but it's also not easy. She wants to eat what she wants to eat, but there's restrictions. So we have this little tug of war because, again, she's still my mother. She's not my child. She reminds me all the time that I am not her mother.
Yes.
She's my mother.
Yes.
But I feel sometimes like I'm the parent again of a toddler in pre-K. I have the bad kid. They don't want to come watch my kid. Come sit with your child. She's not behaving. She's not eating what you put out today, Mary. Yes. I feel like that sometimes with her. But no, as far as the food goes, her diet's changed so much. So now, honestly, she only wants grits. She only wants coffee. So luckily, that's easy and affordable for now. steak dinners, not so much. She's not asking for that either. Yeah, yeah, a lot of foods upset her stomach. She is constricted a lot. And it's just not too much. She can't eat that much. She used to eat a lot, and if you put a lot of food, she'll still eat it.
Yeah.
It just might be good for her. And then we argue about what she's allowed to eat or what she's not allowed to eat.
Yeah.
She listens to the nurses.
Yeah.
If they say you can eat maybe beans this day, then she will have those beans that day. Uh-huh. Even a potato, when it's not on the diet, but she'll have it. The nurse said, if I have it today, it's going to be cleaned out on dialysis day, so I can have this. And she'll tell me in front of the nurses, they said I could have it. And I'm looking at them like, did you say
that? Okay, so we're talking about quality of life. How old is your mom now?
She will be 91 in a month and a half.
Okay, let me ask you something. Do you ever look at that as far as, okay, I know you want her to be here forever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, unfortunately, we don't get to live forever. Okay, but when you're talking about quality of life, okay, have you made adjustments to say, well, mom is 91 and maybe I should be a little bit more liberal with something today? Or are you very rigid with that diet?
No, we definitely are very liberal with everything now. Now we are about quality of life.
Yes.
My mom has had several hospital visits in the past 2 years.
Yes.
Most recently, she was just got back home, I guess this past January 2022. We thought we were going to lose her. I mean, the first 2-3 weeks, she fell almost every day, very weak. It was just little things. She kept coming back. She wasn't eating much. Well, then when she started, we noticed each day she'd get a little stronger. And then one day she woke up, she was hungry. She wanted
everything.
And, you know, and I worried about her diet, but I was like, you know what? She's feeling great. Give her what she wants. She feels good. Let her eat while she feels good.
Yes,
if she feels good, she should enjoy everything.
Yes,
so we do. We give in and we take our good days when they're good. We take the bad with the bad. We just want her to be happy and know that we're trying. We're pushing.
Yes.
We're here with her. I try to encourage her. Even when she's feeling like crap, I come in. I'm like, you okay, mom? How are you? You all right? And she'll give me a thumbs up. You know, I'm her cheerleader, and I try to be as cheerful as possible.
You've got a lot of energy. I see that.
But you have to be, because I noticed when we weren't there, so during COVID, you cannot, if the patient's hospitalized, no family members are allowed.
Right.
Those times that she'd be there, even though I would call and they maybe would let me FaceTime her, you could see how depressed she was. But as soon as she saw my face, she'd light up and smile like, hey, what are they doing here? She'd get excited, she'd laugh, and you know, she'd get a little better. And then she'd be like, tell them I want to go home. I'm ready. Nothing's wrong with me. I'm fine. I just had a little cough. Tell them I can come home. And I'm like, mom, that's not what the tests are saying, but okay.
Yes.
But she likes that. And she looks for it. She'll watch for me when I'm coming in. I'm like, hey.
Yes.
You know, it's just something I do. So you got to stay positive, because again, I just feel like the person's health is all about their attitude.
Right. So you get dialysis in a center or at home?
At home.
Okay. Now, let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
How has that benefited the rest of your family members?
Oh, immensely.
By caregivers, dialysis caregivers coming into the home.
Oh, I appreciate it so much. So when it was time, when we were told she was going to put on dialysis, I told you we were discussing whether she'd be going to a center or not. Her doctor actually told me, based on my mom herself and her demeanor, he felt like this would be a great option for her, being able to do dialysis at home. I knew nothing about it. I'm like, okay, whatever you say, let's go for it. He's like, look, we can do this for you. You can submit the application to your insurance. There's no guarantee, because not every insurance will cover this, but let's at least try. So when I was told it would be quality dialysis, I was super excited, because they came, they called me, they set up an appointment. I think Maria was the nurse that came over immediately and told me everything that we were going to do. We had like a book. I met with her. I think, what is it called? The person with the food, the dietitian.
Oh, dietitian.
Yeah,
okay.
They had come as well. And
okay.
I feel like the social worker.
Social worker. Oh, so they all came together.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, I just felt like a whole team was going to be here supporting my mom.
Part of the family.
And giving
part
me support.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I feel like every time, what I'm grateful for is that they do always call. Your social worker's always like, how are you doing? Do you need anything?
Yes.
How's your mom doing? Does she need anything? Is there anything we can do to support you? And I may not take it, but I appreciate that they ask.
Yeah.
Because I actually did end up meeting them at some point this year, you know, with getting stuff taken care of for her, because her health is failing. So I appreciate it, and I'm grateful that they check in on me and ask. You know, it's so wonderful.
Yeah.
The nurses, awesome. I love that the nurses are here. I like that they stay. I like that they call me and even tell me, you know, she's doing this, you know, just kind of, and I'm able to re-explain to her, and any questions I've had, this is what I love the most. They seem so knowledgeable.
So I understand that you just recently had a weight loss caring for your mother. So tell me about that experience.
Well, yes, I was almost 200 pounds. I was a size 10, 12.
Girl, whatever you did, I have got to do that.
Look great. Thank you.
You look great.
With my mom's health failing and learning things about different things that happened to her, which were all related to food. One thing being the gallbladder. She had her gallbladder removed last year. Mm-hmm. I found out that our Mexican diet contributes a lot to your gallbladder and creates stones, things like this. So
every other habit.
Well, cheeses. So cheese, the bees, mainly the cheese, the tortillas, all this high fat, high processed food.
Yes.
Which are things we love. She loves. Yes. She still wants it. I want
it's
it.
It's cultural.
And she doesn't want to let go of it. But for me, because I saw what it did to the body, it scared me. I don't want to eat those things. I am watching what I eat. I try to watch what she eats. So now I'm down to leaner cuts, leaner things, less cheese, less bread, less tortilla, lots of water, cut out the soda, things like that. But also moving a lot. I run between two houses. I'm constantly, I have a ramp in the back for her wheelchair ramp. I run from my house up her ramp into here to come check on her, back down the ramp, back to my house to go check on my kids. Yeah. I wash my dishes, I wash her dishes. So I'm basically taking care of two households back and forth. So it's like an energized. It's hard.
I am worn out just hearing
you
talk about
it. It is. It does wear you out. And how am I smiling? I don't know.
And it's such a beautiful smile.
But it's my mother. I'd do anything for her. Yes. Anything. She did it for me. Yes. You know, she worked her whole life to put me through private school cleaning houses. And I got to sit with wealthy kids and their parents who dropped them off where I got dropped off on a bus. If she could sacrifice that much for me to get a better education, I can do whatever for her. I'll quit. I'll not work. My husband agrees. He's like, you do what you need to for your mother. That's fine. So.
So tell me, I see there's a lot of pills behind you.
Six. She's on six just for blood pressure alone. These are all her blood pressure pills, and these are all the others. So a little bit of everything she takes.
How do you keep up with all this?
My favorite. You have to be able to sort and manage. I do have a computer. I also have apps. I have schedules.
Yes.
I have mail order, which keeps me on track mainly because I see them and I just keep alert. And then every monthly doctor's appointment, I just go over the list. I tell them what I'm low on. Can I get a new prescription for this? I am a order everything before anything runs out. I don't like things to. I like to be waiting on things, so I'm a constant preparer. I'm always. Getting things ready, gathering and preparing. Okay, what are we waiting for? Waiting for the next storm constantly. So,
how do you manage the money?
For her,
that's very challenging for a lot of people. So, how do you manage the money?
For my mother's, in her case, she retired from the hospital district. She was lucky enough to retire with a pension that does pay for her medicines for her.
Nobody gets pensions anymore.
I know.
So that's the fact that you're blessed.
Back to her age, 91.
Yes.
It was through Harris County Hospital District. She was probably the last group of people to leave with one. Since that retirement, they're a mess now. So she's one of the few, whoever's remaining alive, again, from that. That's who has it. So the pension takes care of the medicine. Her Medicare, she's able to do well at because she doesn't spend too much. I mean, honestly, she is on a fixed income, but she doesn't have many expenses anymore. Her home, luckily, is paid for, so there's no mortgage.
Because she has you.
Yeah.
Okay, and she has the support of her family.
True.
A lot of families don't have that.
I know.
You're trying to say? So basically, she was a good mom, and she has a great daughter.
She does.
And great
daughters.
Two great daughters.
She does.
Wouldn't want to sit
here. Yeah, no, she'll come get me. Yeah.
Okay.
That girl, I don't know where she went. She's gone. I'm the daughter. She'll come get me. It is. I'll say this. If we would be struggling because the cost of these medicines, they are expensive. If not for that, I don't know what she'd do. Because I do look at that. And if she had to pay this outright without the copay amount, there's no way. There's no way we'd be able to pay for light, for gas. Phone, what else? Light, gas, phone, the water, because again, the water bill's expensive with the dialysis. Now she's on oxygen, so the light bill's going up because now we're also paying for oxygen 24 hours a day, seven days a week. So, that's why it's a good thing we have that, and hopefully that stays until, I don't know. We haven't had any letters yet saying they're going to cancel it. So I keep watching. I'm like, oh God, they were warning 2022 was going to end. We're still here. It's still, you're still covered, Mom. Okay.
So how old are your children?
I have a 28-year-old, I have a 15-year-old, and a 12-year-old.
You look great. You know. But I was just thinking, how do you manage to maintain a household and you know, make a balance between your mom?
It's not easy because my kids feel it. My daughter misses her mommy. They've spent a lot of summers knowing that I was at the hospital sitting with her for 8 to 10 hours just waiting to see a doctor. Yeah. So it's hard, and I feel it. And I mean, there's been times where I don't mean to be frustrated, but I do talk to my mom and I tell her, she'll notice, she's like, you look tired, you look frustrated, you seem upset. And I'm like, well, Mom, I am. Yeah. I haven't seen my daughter all day. I've only seen her for 1 hour.
I think that transparency is wonderful. Yeah. I'm trying to say that you guys can talk and have that relationship.
Communication is key, and you do have to express that. And I always tell her, it's not you. I love you, but it is overwhelming. I am tired. I do want to just lay down. I just want to sit in the chair with my kids and just veg out with them.
Yes, but it's
always, I'll be right back. Mommy's going to check with Grandma. I'll be right back. And they'll wait, and then they're like, we know you're not going to come back for like an hour. And I'm like, but I'll be right back. And they're right. I come back an hour, maybe an hour and a half. Yeah. Okay, what happened this time? So I'll tell them the stories, and they love my stories, so that makes it okay. But you just feel that little... So I do my best to come. I'm grateful that the nurse comes early. So technically, I'm done.
Stay home.
Right, I'm back.
I'm back
with them. Now exactly. They don't even notice that I was here. Yeah. And so that works out well. The evenings, I get them home. I get their homework done. I get them fed. And then I come over here once, you know, I'm like, okay, no one needs me, right? I'm going to go see Grandma now. Yeah. And then my husband, he picks up where I slack. So whatever I'm not, he's right there, babe, I've got this. Like right now I'm with you. He's getting our daughter. He's, you know, getting breakfast. He's feeding them. Yes.
So well, I want one of them.
He's great. He's great.
Sounds great.
He is.
Sounds
he's really
great.
Good. Okay. I mean, you have to have that, or I don't know what I'd be. I tell people, I'm like, I don't know. Okay. It's like I meant to do this for her. It's worked out the way it has, and I'm grateful for it.
So let's talk about end of life, okay? Do you think that you will have any regrets once your mother passes on, makes that transition about what you didn't do? Or do you feel like right now you're doing everything that you can, you and your family, to support?
I don't know. I will say, do I feel like I will have it? I will. I know I will because Catholic guilt raised by my mother, for sure. I'm going to have something. There's always something that I'll feel guilty for. I didn't do. Maybe I should have turned her bed down sooner. Maybe I should have shown up faster. Maybe I should have woken up. There's always going to be that.
Yeah.
All we can do, again, is talk about it. She's very aware of what's going on with her health. She's very, very aware.
Yeah.
This last episode, she herself was asking me, because I kept calling the ambulance to come over, because there was times I thought this was it, that one morning she woke up and she said, stop calling the ambulance. I'm done. You need to stop. I need you to look at me and just know that
I like that. So she's able now. She's in her right mind. She's able to tell you what she wants.
She told me.
And you have that advantage, and I think you're going to respect that based on what you're saying.
The funny thing is once she told me that, and I, you know, we got her other daughter, my sister came in, we all agreed this is Mom's wishes. My sister reiterated it. She reiterated it. I talked to the social worker. She was so sweet. She's like, Joanna, okay, I'm going to send you the forms, which she sent over right away.
It's called out-of-hospital DNR. Basically, you're not going to have everybody come in. You're going to call the ambulance.
Correct.
Put paddles on her chest and tried to bring her back and all this, you know.
And they went over that. Even the nurse told me how this would work. And, you know, these are all wishes. Again, I don't know what happens when this happens, but because they prepared me for that, I was, you know, aware.
Yes.
We talked to her about it, and she told me too. She shook her head. She's like, I don't want them doing that to me. I don't want them doing that, Joanna. And my sister was like, we don't want them doing that to Mom. So we all agreed.
Yes.
So she did. She signed it. We got our witnesses. It was very easy. And the weird thing was that night after that was done, I must have slept so well. The next morning, it was weird because I don't know how to explain this. Ever since you've been on dialysis, because of the hours, I sleep maybe 4 to 6 hours. That night, I made a full 8 to 9 hours. I told my husband the next day, I said, I feel like stress just got taken off of me all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that weight of what am I going to do when the time comes.
I think Oprah calls it an aha moment or something like that.
It was like that. That was taken off the plate for me and my sister. So we no longer have that worry anymore. And it feels better.
Yeah.
But am I going to? Sure, of course I am. I don't know.
But you'll know you did what she ask you.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's, yeah. And that part, I can't take, she can't take that away. I can't take that away.
She was still in control.
But she's still choosing her own way, and she's taking it out of my hands, which yes. I respect her even more for yes, that. Because it's like,
yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, yes.
Even now, she's still mom.
Yeah. Well, your mom is really, really blessed, and I think you're just a wonderful
thank
person.
You.
Give me a hug.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. Yeah, thank
okay.
you. Appreciate
and
that.
And thank you so much for letting me do this interview.
I enjoyed it.
I think there are so many people around the world that need to know about the challenges that you face. This was such a unique experience for me, and I really really enjoyed my interview with Joanna. I think one of the most important takeaways for me was about end of life. You know, that her mother was able to make that decision, and they're going to honor that decision.
Yeah.
You know, the dialogue that we had.
I just want to say kudos to Joanna. That was amazing. Very special patient. And even more special caregiver, Joanna has it together, you know? And I just wanna say kudos to her. I wish all caregivers were like that, or at least patients had the resources to have someone like that to support them. But great job, Joanna.
And Maria. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Maria, no. Were you the Maria she was talking about?
I'm the Maria. Yeah, that's me. That's me. Very special patient. I mean, the sweetest. No problems, always does her full treatment. She is right about that not smile. Ms. Sanchez does have that very flat affect, but she's a sweetheart.
And it's Maria's true. That is the real her, because when I went to go visit her, and I speak Spanish, so we were speaking in Spanish, but it was to the question I would answer, she would give me the answer. I think I got one little smile only because I could speak Spanish. But overall, one of the questions, like you said, Cindy, was being the caregiver. Who's caring for the caregiver? Mm-hmm. Because like Joanna said, she's running between her house and her mom's house, taking care of two households. That is so hard on them. And she's right. When I do call and check on my patients, I check on the patients, yes, but I check on the caregivers as well. Hey, what have you done for yourself this week? Have you, you know, gone to go get your nails done, or really just take a good nap? Because it is so much work for them. I mean, doctor's appointments, you know, even meal prepping and stuff. So sometimes I need to ask them to slow down too, because I don't want them to burn out.
Yeah. Well, so I am so glad that we did this program, because caregivers, that's my jam. I worked with them for 20 years, and I know that, you know, KIWK, we focused on patients who didn't necessarily need a lot of family assistance, but to shed a light on those families where the care recipient or the patient really does need family assistance. And so I think, you know, one of the universal things that we really highlighted, in particular with Joanna, was those factors of all of the resources that it takes to provide care for someone in the home. You know, she doesn't work, but there are other caregivers who actually work outside of the home in addition to providing care for their loved ones. And she didn't mention some of the things. You know, she said that her children, she's taking care of her mom and her children, mm-hmm. and she mentions in that clip that they miss their mommy.
Oh,
because
yeah.
there are times when she's spending 8 and 10 hours, you know, with her mother. She's married, and we don't know the effects that that has, but it does have some effect on family relationships. And then, Rita, you mentioned how to tell caregivers, you know, take care of yourself, you mm-hmm. know, but some of the caregivers, particularly depending on the level of care that their loved ones need. I was a caregiver for my mom who was bedbound, and the idea of going to the movies or getting my nails done or even reading a book wasn't always something that I could see a way clear to do if I didn't have anyone who was going to take over that.
Right.
You know, so we hear so many variables that this particular
BJ,
caregiver and the one will hear.
Yeah, BJ, yeah. She said something about, did you have any resentment? Because she kind of mentioned the fact that she was so torn between here and there. I mean, it's a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any resentment about taking care of your mom?
I think most caregivers, particularly family caregivers, but you know, in this day and time, family, the definition of family is not as it
it's different.
Yeah, it's not just people
it's,
who are
it's evolved.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different type of family members. But I think the universal thing you hear from all caregivers is they feel a calling to do this. Mm-hmm. Now, what the source of that calling, that can be varied, but they all feel that this is what they need or should be doing at this point. So that ameliorates some of the resentment. But again, it also depends on the relationship that the person has to the patient.
Okay.
Because some patients aren't as easy to care for.
Oh, they make it very hard for some of the for their children, because when I work with families, and that's one of the things, is especially, you know, if they have mental health issues or they have dementia, that's a totally different type of caregiving that they need to do as well. And maybe they need some special training, and, you know, they may need respite care. And I think it's important for families to have people like ourselves to reach out to we can provide those resources, because they can't always come up with this stuff. You know, they're like, what are you talking about, respite care? There's respite care somewhere?
They don't even know about it.
Yeah. You know, all we have to do sometimes is point them in the right direction. Like Miss Joanna, I mean, you just have to point her in the right direction and she'll know what to do.
She was wonderful.
Other families require you to hold their hand to do some of this stuff. But once they do know about stuff, then, you know, they're like, oh, well, I can do this and I can do that. But I think focusing back on the caregivers themselves, taking care of themselves, and making sure that if they do have other people in their social network, you know, like Joanna said, I have a sister, and I'm assuming they trade off, and they do trade off. So, you know, making sure that everybody gets a little piece of mom and spending that quality time. Like Cindy was saying, you know, are you going to have any regrets at the end? And I think sometimes people do have some regrets because they're like, I didn't spend enough time with mom. I mean, how wonderful is it to be able to spend that one-on-one with your parent or your loved one to talk about things? And like Joanna said, mom told me, this is what I want. I want a DNR. I don't want all that stuff. I mean, that came from her.
So, and there was also an educational component that I observed. Diet.
Oh, yeah.
Joanna lost how much weight? I mean, she looked great. She said that she was at 200 pounds, but she had to put away some of the tacos and the whatever else it was, you know? So
she
I was happy to hear that.
That was given to her.
And she followed through.
Right.
Yeah, it was an eye-opener for me, you guys. It was just a real eye-opener for me. So we have two more segments, right, BJ?
Yeah, we do. Before we go, that I just got some stats, because I think sometimes there might be those people in the audience who they hear the stats and it really mean something to them, but caregivers are our unsung heroes in the healthcare industry. They really are. We could not have the healthcare industry we have today without people who are taking care of their loved ones at home. It's estimated that there are 43.3 million caregivers, and they provide on average 24 hours of care. And those are for the people who don't live with their loved ones. Those are for the ones who come over, do the medications, help them with their baths, help them with. Those people often do work. The ones who live with their caregivers and are there 24 hours a day are providing at least 40 hours of care per week. Now, if you calculated all of that and we had to pay these people, that would be to the tune of over $400 billion of care. Unpaid care.
How does that work though? You know, don't provide, like, caregiver, don't they get paid for something, Rita? Are there resources or anything like that?
There are some resources, but back to, you have to qualify for that. Yeah. You know, insurance doesn't pay for a home health provider in the home. I mean, that's not it. I mean, if a person, Medicare doesn't pay for a home health provider, you know, Medicaid But you have to qualify, you know, you can't have a lot of resources.
Income.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of income. So a lot of families are either paying out of pocket if they are able to afford that, and not many people are able to do that. And if not, it falls back on the family members themselves if that patient has family members that is able to are able to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I went to a family this week. And the family, you know, it's a larger family, so they were able to share the cost, and they were paying their home health provider $700 a week.
And that's for good care.
For good care, $700.
I think it was, and don't quote me on the years, we did have caregiver legislation, particularly during the Reagan era, where some of our congressmen were getting older. And they started to see the benefit of making resources for caregivers. But that was then. This is now.
Yeah.
We're kind of in a different phase of that. And when you think about it, it brings up to mind what we see with Joanna and what we'll see in our other caregivers. There's this intergenerational caregiving that's going on where this was an example of a child taking care of a parent. But you have parents that are taking care of adult kids.
Oh, yes.
And now in some of our communities of color, you're having grandchildren take care of their grandparents. So, and I think that that is something Cindy mentioned to her about the finances. I think particularly in communities of color where they don't have the resources, then oftentimes family members get co-opted into being the primary caregiver.
Well, and BJ, and you know that families of color, we sometimes have multi-generations living in one home.
Yeah.
So, and that is helpful, you know, and sometimes, you know, you're right. You have granddaughters taking care of grandmothers because maybe they have young children, so they're able to stay home. They don't work outside the home. And I think with COVID as well, you're seeing a lot of families going back to living together because it was COVID. And I mean, people didn't have money. But, and then you also brought up a good point earlier that if we were raised like this, Joanna is old school, like some of us, we're a little older, and that's how we were taught. Now, Maria's generation is a little different. I don't know, Maria. I can use my own son as an example as well. He's like, Mom, won't you like to live in a retirement center? I was like, no, I want to stay in my home. You know, so we're at my age, we're starting to have those conversations as well. Yeah. And I think they're important because
it's interesting.
Is different.
It's interesting, Rita. Maria, what is your analogy about that? Like Rita said, you're that age group. So what do you think? I mean, what is your analogy?
I always tell people that the 80s babies were the last of the good people in the world.
You guys babies, are good. You just think different.
Millennials going that way. So I think the 80s babies were the last of the Mohicans, but I would never put my mother in a nursing home. And I might have been a joke, Rita. Do you think he was serious? He wouldn't have done that to you.
No, I don't think he would do it, but he did say there's real nice retirement centers, Mom, because I'm not sick yet like that, but you know.
But I have said, said how you treat me lets me know how I'm going to treat you.
Yeah. I'm going to have to step in here.
Okay.
Step in, love.
Let me step in here. It still comes down to money.
It really comes down
to money.
It
because if you have the resources, because I think our image of nursing home is this horrible, horrible place where people are neglected and they don't get care.
Right.
But like I said, I've worked with seniors and there are some beautiful senior facilities where, you know, but it costs.
Oh, yeah.
And most people don't have the money to be in those facilities. But their facility, I grew up saying, I would love to be in a facility where I get to have my driver take us to the opera. They have the fresh fruit person come in once a week. You have your meals served, you get somebody to clean. Nice.
That's not available to the minorities.
But when I heard how much it
Cindy, we're not going to that home, are we?
Yeah, it's expensive.
Yeah, it's just out of the range, you know. Even though I used to tell my kid, you know, I want, he says, I'll try to put you in a home. I'm like, no, no, don't, there's no try.
Yeah,
and I picked out the one I wanted to live in.
Yeah.
Paying out of pocket. I know that this family is paying $10,000 a month.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. But that's for a good quality care. Now then there's the other side of the tracks. Mm-hmm. And
But to be devil's advocate, a lot of those people would prefer to be in their own home though. Yeah. I mean, it's nothing like being at home and being around your
struggle. Right, but it's a struggle when you have to work and then you have to come home and still have to work. You know, that's hard.
Yeah, but that's the reality of lots and lots of people. I mean, they don't have a choice. They're not going to have the choice to go to those fancy retirement villages.
No.
You know what I mean? This is Joanna's reality. And most of our patients, that is their reality, most people's reality.
So then it comes down to us as a society, one, providing those resources to help caregivers provide better care.
And
because there are some things you can do that change. You have to have a mindset. But people, most caregivers, unfortunately, learn this through trial and error.
Yeah. And BJ, a lot of planning, a lot of families don't plan. I mean, Maria's probably not planning about her retirement already. I mean, what's that going to look like? And a lot
Rita, you said I'm not planning for my retirement.
Are you, babe?
I'm not in my 20s, Rita.
Well, you look
20-ish. It's the time. No, yeah, I know.
Yeah. No, but a lot of people don't.
Time. Yeah. It's time, and I'm doing that. You know, I've started that already.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of wise, Maria, because most people don't start looking at it until they're 50. Yeah. So, hey.
And that's what happens to a lot of our patients. They think that with their retirement and their insurance, all of this is going to be taken care of. And that's not the reality. So we do need to start planning. I mean, for our futures, the young generation needs to know that this is what happens. I mean, you get families that maybe your retirement check is $1,400 a month. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you double it, it's $2,800 a month. But families still have mortgages at 70, 60 years old. Yeah. They still have mortgages. It's not like their homes are paid for. And you know how mortgages are, even at $600 a month, that's a high mortgage for someone that gets $1,400 a month.
Yeah, but I think the thing is the concept of retirement. People plan to go on that Hawaiian vacation. They plan to do all the fun things they didn't do. They don't plan for what's actually going to happen. If you live long enough, you are going to get old. And if you get old, you are going to need some care. And we don't plan for that. We plan for, oh, I'm going to get me a boat and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And if you only plan for that, that goes fast if you get an illness.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to have to wrap this up, but we want you guys to join us. We want everyone to join us next week, where we'll get a different perspective from another caregiver who basically paid her house off and was told that she would have to surrender that house in order to get any help in the home to take care of her husband. We thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week on KIWK.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week.
The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.